Today is July 25th, 2008. My name is Garrett Blauvelt, and today I'm going to be speaking with Tab Dixon about his experiences in World War II. To begin with, Mr. Dixon, where and when were you born?
Scranton, Pennsylvania, 4/9/21.
Okay, and did you grow up in the Scranton area?
Pardon me?
Did you grow up in the Scranton area?
No. Wyoming Valley, Kingston.
Okay.
Harvey's Lake.
So nearby or?
Well, yeah, it's all in the same area there.
Okay.
But no, I didn't go in service. I went in service was. And, I went to move to Buffalo, New York in my high school years.
And did, I was did your parents relocate to Buffalo or?
No, I lived there.
Okay. Was it your parents moved there for a job or?
Yeah, no, my parents lived there. They were working.
Okay. And you went to school in Buffalo in
Riverside,
high school?
Riverside, 2 years. Because I went in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
With my folks separated. And then that's the how come I got to New York.
Okay. And people who joined the Army Air Corps, I like to ask what your interest in flying might have been before the war. Did you have an interest in airplanes or... What were your interests during high school, during your school years?
Sports.
Okay. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Oh, yes. Three other brothers and a sister. Sister still living. Brothers are dead.
Okay. And then you went to finish school. What child were you? Were you...
Next to the youngest.
Okay, so when you went up to Buffalo, there were the other kids still in the house, or had they?
No, we were put all over the place.
Okay.
When they separated, it was hard making a living.
Mm-hmm.
Then my mother got married, and she met a nice fella, and he had us come and live with him. Some of us.
Mm-hmm.
My older brother was old enough to go to work. My sister was staying with my aunt, and my other brother stayed with my mother.
Okay. And you would have graduated around what time?
40.
Okay, 40. And then what did you do when you graduated? Did you go directly into the service or?
I didn't go. I quit when I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
And I went to work down in Indiana.
Okay.
For DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
Powder plant. I made powder for the war.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there probably about a little over a year, and I went in service. I had a draft number, but I volunteered.
Would you have been drafted because of your involvement in a military-related...
I had the number, but I didn't say to find out.
Okay.
I just wanted to go in.
I was just wondering if you thought you might not get called in and you wanted to serve, so that's why you enlisted, or...
No.
Okay.
I was just too far back in the draft to go, so I wanted to hurry it up.
Okay. And when you went in, did they give you a choice on what branch of service?
Yeah. They had two lines up there,
mm-hmm.
They had one line back here. And they told us, now this is the Army, if you want to go into the Army. This is the Air Force. And I was second in line for the Air Force, Air Corps.
Was there a fairly long line for Air Corps?
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to, did people all want to go into the planes or?
Not all of them.
Okay.
It was a good group.
So, and this was very challenging to stay in the air program during World War. Okay. Where were you sent first? Did you have basic training initially?
Basic training in Clearwater, Florida.
Okay. And was this basic training with other Army air cadets? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And did they do any kind of testing to see how would they get rid of people or lower the numbers?
They didn't do that until we got put... going into our training,
mm-hmm.
and some couldn't, they could pick them up what they could shoot and who couldn't shoot,
mm-hmm.
and if they had the stamina to do the work, and you had to have a lot of stamina,
mm-hmm.
to run through sand and all, but we were at Clearwater, and that was our basic training.
Okay, and what was a typical day like in basic training for an Army Air Cadet?
You would get up, have your breakfast, do some calisthenics and everything else they had to shape you up. You had the calisthenics, you had the ropes to climb. And we had some taking our britches off to save ourselves and going in water,
mm-hmm.
and showing you how to make your britches out of a...
Into a life preserver?
Yeah.
Okay.
And...
What time of year was this? Was it during the summer or was it a little earlier in the year?
Fall.
Okay, so it was a little cooler down there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was nice. It was a nice place.
And then after the basic training's over, what do you do next?
We took tests to see what we were good in,
mm-hmm.
and then that's the school that you went to.
Okay.
And I had two or three of them that I could, but I took electric because I wanted to fly if I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I took radio operating.
Okay. And where did they send you to do classes for that?
Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it got colder.
I would imagine it would be a lot colder.
Yeah.
Was this the University of Wisconsin's campus that they would have sent you to?
No, we had a camp out there.
Mm-hmm. And what was this training like? Was it a little bit easier, or were they trying to get rid of people?
No, it was mainly codes.
Mm-hmm.
You had to build yourself up to a certain code to pass.
Mm-hmm.
You had the blinker. Also, you had to pass so many words to pass the blinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, I think it was 15 to pass the radio and about 10 to pass the light,
mm-hmm.
blinker light. And then after we left there, that was about... I was up there about 12 weeks. Then I went to Panama City, Florida,
mm-hmm.
for gunnery, which...
So by this time, did you know that you were going to be on a bomber crew because you were taking gunnery?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. We didn't know what we were going to do.
Okay.
And we had... you just still had some basic training. You were always on double time when you left your barrack. To go to the mess hall, you had to be... running,
mm-hmm.
leave the mess hall to go back, run.
Okay.
And then you had different calisthenics to do. And you had to take a 50 caliber machine gun apart,
mm-hmm.
so many times, and you had to take it apart and put it back together, blindfold. And while we're doing that, then we had also air-to-air shooting. And you had so much of that, and I finished mine beforehand,
mm-hmm.
so they made me put the gun together and take it apart, I don't know how many times. But after that, you graduated, they sent the guys to different places, so many to MacDill Field, and that's where I ended up at.
Mm-hmm.
And after we got down there, they put us in squadrons, putting us together.
And at this time, were you associated with plane by now, or is this the...
No.
Thing? Okay.
No.
Did you know, have any idea what you were going to be flying on?
No.
Okay.
No. And then they started getting squadrons,
mm-hmm.
and the four squadrons make a group.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the 394th Bomb Squadron, then we had... the 584th Bomb Squadron, the 585th, 586th, and 587th.
Okay.
And I was in the 584th. And we still worked on our taking messages on radio,
mm-hmm.
sending and receiving.
Mm-hmm.
We had that all the time. We had to... fool with our guns, but taking them apart, cleaning them,
mm-hmm.
and we had night shooting, following the tracers, which would give you where your target might be,
mm-hmm.
and we had shooting planes down. We had a tail end of a B-17, and they mounted a turret on there. So they'd use skeet to shoot the clay pigeons.
So were you sitting where the tail gunner was, or did they put
tail
something?
Tail gunner, yeah. Okay. That's where they'd be.
Okay.
But that wasn't our place. I was a waist gunner, but this is, it's getting used to following the
a moving object across the horizon?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we had that. Then our air-to-air firing was the AT-6. The pilot was in the front, we was in the back with the gun, and they had a tow target a little ways away. I mean, quite a ways away. They didn't want to get too close or too far away, because some did shoot at them and got the tail of a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And after you had so many things, so much time to do on that, so many rounds to shoot while you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And that also made them keep us active. They made another turret gun in the back of just a little chair back there. And we practiced shooting skeet with those things. And they let you know when you passed, you got your stars and stripes.
Okay.
So a number of us got them, a lot of them did fail. And then we went to MacDill Field.
Okay.
And that's when we started on getting their squadron.
Okay.
And all together.
And the people who failed at any of these steps, were they immediately sent out of the Army Air Corps, or what would happen if you failed?
They'd send them to another place, see what they could do. This was flying now, though, and they failed their flying, but they still could stay in the Air Corps if they wanted to.
So if they failed at being a pilot, they could be like a navigator.
Yeah.
If you failed at being a navigator, could you go to like being a radio operator?
Some of them could if they wanted to go for a pilot or that, they could do that, but they couldn't shoot the gun well enough to. So if they wanted to be a pilot, they'd take that. If they passed, they were a pilot.
Okay.
So you had quite a few opportunities to still stay in the Air Force or Air Corps.
Okay. And then now I guess we're going to MacDill. What time of year would you be heading to? Were you sent to MacDill?
I think it was spring.
Okay. And what was it like? This was a fairly large base.
It's a big base, yeah. It's one of the main ones right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have a command down there for half the world.
Even then, though, it was a fairly large facility.
Oh, yeah. It was.
And what type of planes were they flying out of MacDill? Was this
26s?
Okay. Were there anything but 26s or just 26s?
That's all we were.
Okay.
26s.
I was just wondering if there are other planes at MacDill.
No.
Okay.
One or two, but they weren't involved in what we were doing.
Okay, because I think I remember B-17 pilot spoke about being at MacDill at one point, and I was just wondering if they
they
would have flown different planes in and out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some of our fellows were transferred out into 26s and put in 24s.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have, some of us could have went to 24s, but we're used to the 26s now. We didn't like to lose our pilot, but we enjoyed what we were doing.
Okay. So you get to MacDill, and that's where you find out you're going to fly B-26 on
right.
B-26.
Yeah, that's right.
And what was your initial impression of the plane?
Well, at first, it's, as I said, playing a day in Tampa Bay was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then on one day or one Saturday morning, we were all out in review, and the planes were flying in review, and pretty soon they were going to land. And the first plane came in all right. The second one started in and got caught in prop wash, and it went down and killed six fellows. So that's what you had to put up with.
So the crew of a B-26 would have been six individuals?
Yeah.
Okay, and what would the six crew members be? There'd be a pilot, co-pilot, radio operator, navigator?
Bombardier.
Okay.
Your pilot, your co-pilot, your either a bombardier or a navigator. Then you have your radio operator, you have your turret gunner, which was the engineer, and you had a tail gunner.
Okay.
Six men.
And so you would have done multiple positions. You mentioned you would have been a waist gunner also, or was
I was waist gunner or radio.
Okay.
If we flew wing positions, we flew only six men,
mm-hmm.
and I flew with waist gun then.
Okay.
And if we flew lead, we'd have two more men on there, and I'd fly in the radio position.
So they would add two waist gunners on?
Hmm?
They would add two waist gunners on for those kind
no,
of
things? No, just one.
Okay.
You took care of both windows.
Okay.
It's not very wide between there.
Okay. And you've mentioned that these were a difficult plane to fly, or they were a more...
They were a good plane to fly, but they were touching.
Okay. And the first crew you were assigned to, is that the crew that you would pretty much remain with?
That's the way it was going to be.
Okay.
But they took our pilot and put him in B-24s.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had to start with another one. And until I got the one I went overseas with, he was there at MacDill.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you at MacDill for training? You can just give
not
a general
idea. Not too long.
I'd
say about maybe 3 months or four,
okay.
something like that.
And what type of things would you be doing? What would
just fly.
Okay.
We couldn't send anything but fly and bomb in
the bay?
Bay.
Okay.
And we skip low-level fly and sometimes high flying. We'd fly nights sometimes just to get used to it in case we had to fly nights.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bay, we'd skip bombing and go as low as they possibly could and drop one bomb at a time, thinking there's something over there that they were aiming at.
Okay. And then after MacDill, what happens next for you?
We were sent over to Atterbury.
Did they make you fly across?
Oh, yeah.
And
yes.
Which route did you go? I know some of the cargo planes flew down to Brazil and across to Africa.
We just went straight across. We were still in training.
Okay.
And we just went as quick as we could there, and it was hot, real hot.
Okay.
And one of the, all we were doing then was the pilots were doing the training then. We did a little listening in on the radio and doing little things, but not too rigorous. And when we went, we had a flat tire on an airplane. Was coming in for a landing, and we had a flat tire.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little rough.
Yeah.
And we had a good pilot that could keep that under control.
With this, how many wheels would a B-26 have? Is this a three-wheel, two-wheel?
No, they had a nose. Yeah, a nose and your two...
Okay. And then once you get to England, what's life like there? How does your day change at all? Is it primarily training initially?
No, just you had so much training and not too much because we were flying.
Okay.
On missions.
How soon after you got there did they have you flying on missions?
I would say 2 weeks.
Okay. So just a little bit of orientation to England, and then you would have been doing missions. And what type of missions would a B-26 squadron be doing?
Well, they weren't too long because we couldn't carry too much fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed in the air. Our maximum, I guess, was about 3.5 hours.
So from England, we're talking,
France,
Belgium.
Well, yeah, the coast of France. Mm-hmm. And all. It was mainly railroad centers and railroad tracks. And we had different bomb places where they made bombs and where they repaired their trains and things like that. Their most important places we went in bomb. It could either, if it was, we may have to fly real low if the weather was,
mm-hmm.
or we had a fall, they call it, we'd have one plane there alone that would take us in, and they would find the target, and we'd have to toggle off of them.
Okay. How would you get ready? What would the day of a mission be like for you? What time would you wake up? Would they brief?
Well,
who did they brief in the group?
Yeah, we'd go into briefing, and we'd get up in the morning at all the time, the same time, not unless it was special. And we'd go to breakfast, come back, go down to the briefing room, and we'd have our equipment with us. And that tells us how the target was going to be, where we're going to go in at. so we wouldn't get all shot up because they had movable guns. And then we'd go through there. We may get one or two shots of flak, but over the target, we got a lot of flak.
Okay.
And I hit 63 missions. I went 63 missions and didn't see a fighter plane. So saw our fighter plane, but didn't see any of the Germans.
When would you have begun these missions? Did you arrive there?
It could be about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning.
I guess, when did you arrive in England, though? Like the year or the period?
February.
Of 44?
44.
Okay. And then I was going to ask you, I know that when you took other bombers, it was a 25 mission cap. Was there a specific
reason? Yeah, ours was 65.
It was 65? Is there any reason why they would do that? Is because you were over enemy?
We're small, had short runs.
Okay.
These other guys had 12, 14 hours of flying. That's it's a long time.
Would you do one mission a day and then come back? And
Some we did. Well, we used one time or two times. We had three missions a day.
Okay.
But it was mainly two missions, unless the weather got bad.
And this is starting in February 1944. Are you starting to do missions that are... you have any idea that your missions were preparing for the eventual invasion?
Oh, yeah.
So you were taking out strategic targets
for
that. Mm-hmm. Were you doing missions when the D-Day invasion occurred? Were you still there doing...
I was on the 6th of June.
Okay.
That's when they had D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
I flew the morning mission. That was early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one we had three missions on. They didn't have time to fix the holes that the flak did. They'd land, fill it with gas, check it all over, see if it's flyable, and take off again.
Okay, so the only reason...
I wouldn't do it. Being a crew... See, I was on the main crew, and we didn't take two missions, not less... They were short.
Mm-hmm.
So, one mission, our sixth mission, we weren't supposed to fly, but then somebody called out and we had to go up and fill in for him.
Mm-hmm.
And we got shot up pretty good. It killed our co-pilot, injured our pilot, injured our bombardier. And three enlisted men in the back didn't get touched. But we were ready to bail out because he lost control of the plane for a while.
Okay. You didn't have to bail out, though?
No.
Okay. I guess sort of with regards to that, would they replace the crew that you went there with eventually due to casualties, they would bring people in? Or would they move you to a different crew? How did that
work?
Well,
no. We'd still stay with the same ones. They'd fill in the spot that was...
Okay.
And the three enlisted men were there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We flew 63 missions together. And our pilot, when he got hurt, then we didn't fly with him until... I don't think we ever flew back with him because he took a long time to heal.
Okay.
So they put us up with somebody else.
And I know I've read from, were you trained to do anything, any other occupations on the ship, or were you just trained to be the radio operator? Was there ever a situation where the pilot said, so-and-so needs to also learn how to fly, or so-and-so needs to do navigation?
Well, the engineer had his do.
Okay.
He had, if somebody, like, he sat the co-pilot seat when finishing the ride home.
Mm-hmm.
I was called up to contact the base and tell them what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
The tail gunner was just on the watch, see if that we wasn't followed to keep watch, and just keep us in clear.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask is what was the environment like with regards to taking you off the front line? Did they give you a rest period where they said your crew's done so many missions, you get...
I don't know.
Any time off? Did they ever do that?
Well, we had time, a couple of days, maybe 3 days off, but that's about it.
Okay, so you could be going up. You didn't really have a lot of block time off. It was
no.
go up,
No.
And how long were you doing missions until the end of the war, or were you?
Oh, I came home before it was over.
Okay.
Because I had my 60, I didn't have 65, I had 63. Mm-hmm. But being a lead crew, we couldn't fly them all the time. Mm-hmm. So they took that into consideration. Because almost all of our guys were gone that we went over with.
Okay. And sort of on the when would you have done your last mission? Do you know about what time of year you would have completed your...
My last mission was in February of 45.
Of 45. Okay, and did they tell you beforehand that this was going to be your last mission, or was there...
No, we didn't know until we got back.
Okay, so when you got back, they told...
Well, no, we went on a trip to the front lines to see how the Air Force and the ground crew went to work together. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing we had ground crew. A lot of us wouldn't have been back.
And did you ever change airfields? Did they move you into France as the line changed, or did they?
Well, we moved over from England to Bayeux,
okay.
France.
Okay.
And then we stayed there until they got some work done someplace. Then we went to Orléans. It was a big plant, but it was pretty well bombed up.
Okay.
In fact, we bombed at one time and put holes in the runways.
And then you had to serve at that airfield?
I think it's just about a month.
Okay.
And then we went to Cambrai.
Okay.
And I was there till the rest of my time.
And you were still doing missions in support of the armies, doing close railroad. You were trying to knock out German supply lines, I would imagine, things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
For where they are and there was anything in front of them like that, that's what we knocked out, so they wouldn't have such very much the resistance.
Okay. And just an estimate, how high would your planes be flying? Is there a certain level
we sometimes be about 12,000 feet or lower.
Okay.
You couldn't stay up there very long because we had air, but we didn't use it, not unless we seemed to be getting dizzy, because 10,000 is about the height that you start wearing your... Mm-hmm.
So you would go up, bomb, and then go back down? Is that how it worked?
You would settle up and have a way out. It all sorted out. Like you go and take a trip in the summertime. Mm-hmm. You mark it out, and that's the way they do there.
Okay. And then have we missed anything about what it was like to do these missions? Is there anything I didn't cover?
On D-Day, like to mention? Okay. It was raining, and we got up awful early.
Okay.
The executive officer told us to put our helmet on, carry our 45, mm-hmm. and we never did that before. Mm-hmm. And he told us when we could call, we knew that something was wrong. And when we got down to the briefing, there was MPs right there, which they weren't there before. Mm-hmm. They checked us, see what was wrong, looked at our dog tags. And when we went into the building, the chapel was up on the platform. And we just about knew what was going on. When we took off, we thought we had our own group with us, but we found out that other planes were taking off at the same time. Someone would get motor trouble and they'd have to land real fast. They'd land at an opposite field, they couldn't get back to their own. And when we flew over, we didn't see the ships, battleships on the bottom, and there's planes all over the sky.
Okay.
And when we saw one come down, we didn't know what it was. But somebody said, oh, there goes a 24 down. You can see the world over there. And I don't know how it missed planes below them because they were flying real high.
So they were flying over you and then...
Oh, way high.
Yeah. Okay.
And we were low. We had to change our sight. They took an extra bomb sight in case they had to change positions, which we had to come down. Mm-hmm. Oh, came down to about 2,300 feet.
Okay.
And we saw a lighthouse sitting there, and there we could see trace bullets come up. Mm-hmm. So we decided to shoot back down at them, and all of a sudden stopped. We saw, we got what was in there. But when we looked out the other window, mm-hmm. a lot of battleships were lobbing shells over there.
Okay.
And you could see the tanks and things on the road.
And so, do you remember what missions you would have done on D-Day? What your target was?
Last mission on D-Day. We hit Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, we had to circle around a couple of times before we could drop our bomb.
Okay.
Because there was other going in there before us.
So you were attacking the German emplacements on the beach, or mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So like, see, that's where the invasion was going to be, right there, mm-hmm. all along Normandy.
So you were going in before people arrived. You were softening up the beach.
Yeah.
So
that's okay. What it was for, yeah.
Okay. And then you did multiple missions that day? Is that correct?
Three of them. Okay. I didn't. No, our crew didn't. We just did the one.
Okay. And then would another crew use your plane?
Another crew.
They used the same plane that you had, or?
Oh, yeah, our plane, yeah. We didn't fly the first mission that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Some other guy did, and he's the only one that had a hole in his plane. Flat. Hit. And that was our plane that he was flying.
Okay.
So it got initiated the first day.
So was it a situation where the planes, was your crew always using the same plane or using an available
plane? Same plane.
Okay.
Not unless it was in for
repairs or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they had to get them out as fast as they possibly could. Sometimes they wouldn't get all the flat holes patched, and they had to put it out.
Okay. And did you have the same ground crew that would work for that plane, or would they service?
Oh, yeah, same. They had their own plane.
So you had a good relationship with the ground crew as time wore on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Going back towards, going to February 1945, when you land, are you informed upon landing that this was your last mission, or?
When we got back to our squadron,
okay,
we went to the brief room and told what we saw and what we could see and what had happened. So,
and did they make you fly your plane back, or did you leave?
We were there at our base.
Okay, but to go home, how were you sent home?
Ship.
Okay,
they flew us over to England, and we waited for at Southampton. From there, we waited for. Ship to go home. Then we went back in a. A number of. Well, that's.
Okay.
Number of ships.
And what? You arrived in February back or early March?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we got back in
and
February.
Were you let out of the service at that time or?
No, I got out in May.
Okay.
In September.
What did you do when you got back in terms of military service?
Well, I went 21, I stayed home 21 days.
Okay.
Went 11 days to Santa Ana, California to hear people talk, to get us used to the people of the home, the civilians back here. That we had to get used to them.
And so it was a transition, then, sort of transitioning back to normal life? Is that what they were doing? Okay.
Then we had that 11 days, they sent us to Georgia,
mm-hmm.
Moultrie, Georgia. They had planes up there that were, they were training fighter pilots, and they gave me those planes to keep the radios
mm-hmm.
going on this plane. They were AT-6s.
Okay.
So.
And then after this, is that when they let you out of the service now, or is that?
You accumulated your numbers, and you had so many numbers. Well, I had them, but they weren't all together.
Okay.
And I had to wait till they got them there, and then they sent me to Atterbury to get my walking papers.
Okay. And when you left the service, what did you do after that?
A month I took off.
Okay.
And then I went to, where did I go to work for? I went to work for Dunlop Tire.
Did you ever use the GI Bill for anything? Or?
Yeah, I went to school.
Okay.
I went to Bible school in Springfield.
Okay. And you're at Dunlap Tire. How long were you at Dunlap Tire until?
A what?
How long were you working for Dunlap Tire?
About 11 months.
Okay.
Then I went to school.
Mm-hmm. And then
stayed there until 50.
Okay.
And then we worked in small churches.
What did you do in small churches, sir?
Did sales work.
Okay.
It's like you're selling religion to the people.
Okay.
So I was used to that, so I could sell to stores.
Okay. And then what did you do after that? I'm just sort of trying to bring up to the present.
Well, I took small churches. They couldn't pay, so I continued to do sales work.
Okay. And how long?
And my last church was in 82, I think, in Hazard, Kentucky.
Okay. And then what brought you to Florida eventually?
My son was in the Navy, and he got out. His wife wanted him to get out. He was stationed at Cecil Field. And so he got out. He got out for a year, a little 13 months. And she wanted to go back, wanted him to go back in the Navy. So he went back to Cecil Field, got the same thing of everything mm-hmm. he had before he got out. And we moved here with him and
okay.
over in 301.
I guess sort of wrapping things up, I just want to ask some questions about, the first question is regarding the memories of World War II. How do you think World War II is remembered now, and how do you think people should remember World War II?
I think they should realize that what happened then, we do, but we had some that go in there that after the war that they just thought it was some fun to go and mm-hmm. go here and go there. But they didn't. I don't think they think they thought it was just some sort of a game.
Mm-hmm.
Some took it as others because they made a career out of it.
Okay.
But then some just went in there, wanted to go in and get out and get something from the, like they could go to school, they could take their GI Bill and go to school. And some, I think it's all right now, but some take it and some just leave it.
Okay.
I can thank my son because he spent 20 years in it. He was in the Navy.
Okay. How many children did you have? One?
But he came 10 years after we were married.
Okay. And you were married after your service time?
Yeah.
Okay.
My third year of college, I got married.
Okay.
And he came 10 years after that.
And then, I guess the other question I had is, have you been involved in veterans organizations?
I was with VFW and American Legion.
Okay, and when did you get involved with these?
Oof.
Has it been a while?
Yes, it's been a while.
Okay. How do you think, or what do you think the importance is of these organizations?
They do good. They do well. They make, they come play, or we play bingo, and they put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something to do. But, and what they do for people that are having it rough in their homes, they help out and give. And we could use a lot more.
Okay.
We could use a lot more.
And do you think that the United States, as you were leaving the service, did they do enough, or what can we learn from how they helped you transition back to civilian life that might help people down the road? What did they do, and maybe what do you think needs to be done?
They gave me the opportunity to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped us buy a home if we needed one.
Yep.
And the money they gave us in school, when we were going to school, they furnished everything. I didn't have to pay a cent.
Do you think the number of people who served in World War II made it easier for soldiers to transition back to civilian life? Because a lot of that was happening with a lot of people, and there was a lot of experience dealing with that transition. Or
I would think it would be the place that they fought at, because some places were South Pacific,
mm-hmm.
and it was rough there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to join up go there after I had my leave at home.
Yep.
But I started talking to somebody who came from there, and I changed my mind because mm-hmm. they had it rough. Now I had it was rough, but it wasn't like some guys. Because some of our guys got fighters thrown at them, and they had a little rough time there.
Mm-hmm.
They knocked some of them down, which was good, but we didn't see one. I saw one plane that was way down low, and it was a jet plane. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first jets that they put out.
Okay.
And it didn't do anything, just stayed down there flying around.
Okay. Well, that about wraps up the questions that I had. Is there anything that I failed to mention, or anything you'd like to bring up before we conclude the interview?
No, I'll think of it later on, no doubt, but that's too late. I touched on it just about.
Okay.
like your D-Day and...
Yeah, what we're trying to do is sort of get your involvement before the war, your involvement in the war, and touch on what you did afterwards.
Before the war, I worked a little over a year in a DuPont,
mm-hmm.
making powder. I worked in the lab checking out to see if the powder was the right size and so they could pass it on and start making it full force. That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Yes.